Started. The time is now 8:33. I don't know why my apologize. My computer keeps shutting down my files. So give me 1 second. All right, third time's a charm. The time is now 8:34 a.m. on February 11th, 2022, and I call the meeting of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. This meeting is video hosted using Zoom. The public and parties on this agenda have been properly noticed of this fact and have been supplied with the meeting access instructions. Ms. Poe, would you please call roll?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Davey?
Present.
Dr. Catarino?
Present.
Mr. Dinar?
Morning, I'm present.
Dr. Meyer?
Present.
Dr. Malott? Ms. Shreve?
Present.
Mr. Nguyen?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Please note that the times stated on the agenda are approximate. The board makes every effort to begin proceedings at the scheduled time. The board may suspend one discussion item, proceed to a timed item, and then return to a former agenda item at a later time. The board may also reorder non-timed items. The board encourages everyone in attendance today to provide feedback by completing the board assessment form. You'll find a link on the meeting agenda that is posted to the board's website. I do want to take a moment to recognize all board members for all of their hard work. I know that we have spent many hours preparing for each of the meetings, and that's no different for this meeting as well. Thank you guys very much for your time, your effort, and your diligence in reviewing all the documentation and preparing for this meeting. I also want to acknowledge board staff and our attorney. Once again, they have made tremendous strides in making all of this easier for us. So as far as technologies that they've put into play, they have done a great job in increasing efficiencies across board tasks, and we're very grateful for that. Attendance of this board meeting is eligible for continuing education credit if it is at least 4 hours long. Should its duration be 4 hours or more, make note of the code words provided throughout the meeting to report the code words to the board staff for the purposes of earning continuing education credit. Look for the link on the board's meeting page for this particular meeting. Given the brevity of today's agenda, it is possible that the meeting will require fewer than 4 hours. And we do appreciate everyone's understanding to that.
Madam Chair, this is Ms. Poe. I would just like to note for the attendance record that Dr. Malott has joined the meeting at 8:36 a.m.
Thank you. Welcome, Dr. Malott.
Hello.
My apologies for running late.
No worries. We're just getting started. I was having some technical difficulties myself. All right. We'll now move to the call to the public. Those wishing to address the board do not need to request permission in advance. However, the board will limit the number of persons speaking during this time to a reasonable number on any public comment matter. In addition, each person wishing to address the board will be given 3 minutes to do so. Pursuant to ARS 38-431.02H, the board can only take action on matters listed on the agenda. The board members may not discuss the matter with each other or with the member of public addressing the board. The only option available is to instruct staff to place the topic on a future agenda if applicable. Those wishing to speak, please unmute your line, state your name, and I will call on you. And as a friendly reminder, if you are not speaking, if you could please mute your line. Thank you. Hearing no calls to the public, we will move to agenda item number 5, council update. Ms. Galvin, do you have an update for the board?
I have nothing to report at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Agenda item number 6 is the consent agenda. For the record, are there any recusals from items on the consent agenda? I have 2, and that's going to be applications for behavior analyst Kelsey Buckler and Donna Salazar.
I also have a recusal for Dr. Sade.
Okay, that'll be for the next agenda item. Thank you.
Oh, sorry.
No worries.
Okay.
All right. A board member may request to remove an item from the consent agenda for independent discussion and action. Are there any such requests? Hearing none, do we have a motion to approve the items on the consent agenda?
So moved.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Excellent. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries. See, we've got a timed item.
Yes, Madam Chair. I am looking to see if any of the applicants listed at 17, 18, or 19 are present. I can't, I haven't been able to identify if they've just called in, but if the leads for those items, Dr. Catarino or Dr. Meyer, are ready, we could jump to do a few of those or maybe all of those before 8:45.
Perfect. So agenda item number 17, Dr. Catarino, you are the lead for this application. Are you able to provide a summary to the board at this time?
Yes, I believe this is Dr. Velez. And this was previously brought up to the board before 2014. He did take the EPPP in 2014, but did not meet the pass point. At that time, it was indicated that he was a graduate of NAU in counseling psychology in May 2012. His hours were accepted at that time. And he has new recommendations, and he is asking to retake the EPPP. He does have the required self-query form and 2 new recommendations. So the reason why this came here is because he is a NAU grad and Dr. Malott, you know, speeches at NAU. We didn't want any conflict of interest. So I would recommend that he be allowed to take the EPPP again. Any questions?
Discussion? That's a motion and a second.
Excellent. We have a motion and a second. All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries.
I'm recused.
Oh, and we have 1 recusal. Thank you, Dr. Malott. We will move to agenda number 18. Dr. Catarino, this is for, Dr. Holzenfall.
I'm not sure I'll pronounce it. It's Dr. Jennifer Holzenfall. She's a graduate of the ASU Counseling Psychology Program, which is APA accredited. She completed a 2,000-hour internship. She completed a postdoc of 1,602 hours. She did already pass the EPPP, has 2 recommendations and the self-query form. This came up, I think, because originally there was some discussion of counting her pre-doc hours, but after she completed the postdoc, those were the hours that we are considering, and she does have over 3,000 hours. So I would recommend her to also for licensure.
And I'm recused again. I just hired her a couple of weeks ago, so.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. There is 1 noted recusal. We will move now to agenda item number 19. This is for Dr. Walters. Dr. Meyer, you are the lead for this application matter. Please summarize this application for the board.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Walters applied to take the EPPP and licensure couple of years ago. She failed the ECCC in March of 2021 and then reapplied that following summer, but her application was not forwarded to the board. And so it's being moved directly to the board today once that lack of review was noticed. She had been previously reviewed by the board. There were a couple of issues with how she completed the form because she was previously denied by the Arizona Board of Behavioral Health Examiners due to some coursework that did not meet the requirements. There were no other errors or concerns with her board that or with that application that would have us concerned. So again, she was previously approved and there's no other issues with her application that I saw. So I would make a motion to move her application for approval to set for the ECCC and licensure.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Any opposed?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Should we do number 16? It's also a behavior licenses application.
I think, Dr. Davey, do you think that will go quickly? I apologize. I was not at the CBA meeting, so I'm not sure.
Yes, it was a recusal matter. It should go okay. Very fast. The only issue is administrative, and I've already alerted staff to that. This individual comes forward seeking licensure as a behavior analyst in the state, completed her coursework as well as her supervised experience work, worked at various agencies throughout the Valley, all under licensed behavior analysts. The program chair for ASU signed off on the full experience package that this young lady went through. However, number 8 on page 13 or 12 of the PDF just wasn't checked a yes, and I've already reached out to Kathy and Heidi and yes, and so hopefully they can just get that checked off, and I would move that this be this individual be granted licensure with so long as number 8 is checked yes.
All right, do we have any discussion? I'll second that. So all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. We will now return. Thank you, Dr. Davey. We'll now return to agenda item number 7. This is a timed item. The board may vote to go into executive session for any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38431.03A2 to review confidential records, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is confidential by state or federal law, and or ARS 38-431.03A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney. Agenda item number 7. Is the discussion consideration possible action regarding proposed settlement agreement for complaint 2014 with Dr. Shanna Sade to include possible action on proposed counteroffer to said consent agreement. Dr. Sade, I believe you are present today. Would you like to make a statement to the board at this time?
No, I'll rely on my written correspondence. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Dr. Sade based on her correspondence to the board?
Perfect. And if the board needs a kind of a summary or an overview of where this case has been, I don't know if Heidi is prepared or Ms. Poe, just to reorientate everyone.
Yes, Madam Chair, I can describe the history of this case. So it was previously, the board previously issued an order as an the outcome of this particular investigation. And that matter was appealed by Dr. Sade. And in October, the board met to review the ruling issued by Maricopa County Superior Court. And some of the findings of that ruling were in favor of the board. Some of the findings were in favor of Dr. Sade. And so at that time, the board elected to schedule this case for another informal interview. We have yet to actually schedule that because of the ensuing negotiations to settle this case in lieu of that type of a proceeding. So the board reached out to Dr. Sade with a possible settlement in the form of a consent agreement prescribing continuing education and probation. And then Dr. Sade has since countered with non-disciplinary actions in order to resolve this matter. In November, the board had attempted to vote on this on the counter proposal, and we did not arrive at was unable to arrive at a at any type of action with a majority vote. So now that we have the full the full board present, we may want to consider another motion to resolve the case.
Thank you, Ms. Pecknon. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Pecknon? All right, hearing none, we can move into discussion. Does anybody have any discussion that they would like to have over this matter?
Ms. Pecknon, is it possible, Madam Chair, is it possible to hear the motion that failed? Do we have that?
Yes, Madam Chair, I can summarize the two motions. I can't remember in what order they occurred, but there was a motion to propose non-disciplinary continuing education and a letter of concern, and it failed. There was another motion to dismiss the case outright, and that one also failed.
Dr. Sade, did you have a question? Oh, but you
I don't know if this is appropriate, but that's not my recollection of what the motions were, because I paid pretty close attention. One motion was for an informal hearing to be scheduled, and that motion failed. And then there was a second motion for non-disciplinary plus CEUs, and it failed because one person wanted dismissal and did not support that motion, and two people wanted to vote for the motion.
So, Madam Chair, the minutes of the December meeting at pages 5 and 6 is where the motions and the voting is listed.
Could you read those, Mr. Diner, do you have it in front of you?
Yeah, the first motion was Dr. Meyer moved to schedule the case for an informal hearing. The motion failed due to a lack of a second. Second motion, Ms. Shreve moved to offer Dr. Sade a non-disciplinary order to complete 3 hours of continuing education on each of the topics of record keeping and informed consent, 6 hours total, within a period of 6 months. That motion failed by roll call vote.
And I don't know if it would be helpful, maybe I should have done this before, to just reiterate what my counter proposal was. It was simply, I will do any amount of CEUs that the board sees fit. There may be times when, you know, there's only a certain number of kinds of CEUs available. I think at one point the board suggested 12 CEUs in record keeping. And I said I would do it, but I would need maybe some help finding those because I don't know of 12 that were available at that time. So my position is that I'll do any number of CEUs for a non-disciplinary outcome of this case. You know, obviously I wish a dismissal were possible, but the ongoing stress of this lingering and how it affects my employment opportunities, the delays are really significantly impacting me at this time, which is why I would hope for settlement.
Thank you, Dr. Sade. And I just want to note for the record, we did request at the last meeting that the board staff supply us with all of the documentation. So there is a lot of documentation. So we do appreciate everybody in their assistance of orienting us to those documents. It is definitely something that we have present and before us. It's just, like I said, we requested all documentation from, you know, the start. And so it is a lot of information. So thank you, Dr. Sade. Thank you, Mr. Diner. So where we are at now will be the discussion related to where we move forward. We have heard and read Dr. Sade's counter. We have an understanding of the previous motion history. Does anybody have any comments or thoughts?
I'll make a motion that we do a non-disciplinary letter of concern with 6 hours of record keeping CEUs.
I would second that emotion. That motion, not emotion, just motion.
It wasn't emotional, it's just emotion.
I feel like it's a song. The song popped in my head.
Madam Chair, if I may, so just to clarify, it was 6 hours total in record keeping, or is it 3 hours of record keeping and 3 hours in informed consent?
Yeah.
Okay. I would amend my motion to 3 hours of record keeping and 3 hours of informed consent.
And that's non-disciplinary CE?
Non-disciplinary CE.
You know, the other area that I'm interested in is billing practices. I know it might be connected to record keeping, but when I think back through the case and, you know, there were a lot of concerns expressed by the board regarding, you know, the billing, which was, there was just a lot of questions that we raised at the time. So maybe we could, if I could make a friendly amendment to maybe add 3 more hours, so 9 for billing.
Mm-hmm. What? Do we get into an issue there with the whole thing that was the return from the appeals court that we haven't addressed, laid out the evidence for each area sufficiently? I mean, that was why I felt like we needed to go back to an informal interview to actually have everything clear on what the concerns were, what the evidence is and is not, because throughout there's been, well, there are issues in a lot of different areas and we didn't procedurally address them all correctly. So it this has come up several times when there are concerns and we keep wanting to address more things, but we haven't done it appropriately from a procedural perspective.
Can I make a motion to go on exec session since I made a motion for is it too late for that?
It is not. It would be for legal advice.
For legal advice. Can I make a motion for exec session to obtain legal advice?
Second.
A motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries.
I'm recused, just to remind you.
Thank you, Dr. Caterino.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Caterino, when I send the invite for executive session, just don't accept it.
Okay.
Would offer Dr. Sade a non-disciplinary letter of concern, require her by consent agreement to complete 9 hours of continuing education, non-disciplinary, 3 in record keeping, 3 in informed consent, and 3 in billing practices. The motion did not specify within what period of time that the hours should be completed. Because they are non-disciplinary, they typically are able to be used for the renewal of Dr. Sade's license. If this is the motion, I would appreciate, and we do have a second. The motion was made by Ms. Shreve and seconded by Dr. Diana Davis-Wilson. What period of time within which would you like Dr. Sade to complete those hours? So we can make that a part of the motion.
Since she can count it towards the CEs, maybe they need to be done by the time she comes up for renewal. That would make it easy.
Does Dr. Sade, does that give you enough time? I don't know when your renewal date is.
I'll do them within 60 days.
Okay. So then I will accept, then I think I would agree with that since I made the motion. Thank you, Dr. Millant.
And I will agree with that as well as a second. Do we have any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Do we need a roll call vote on this?
You do not, because it's non-disciplinary. If you would like one, we can do that.
I think we have a consensus. Any opposed? Nay.
Nay.
Okay. The motion does carry.
One recusal, and Dr. Meyer is opposed.
Thank you.
So Dr. Sade, a letter of concern will be drafted for your review, and as well, there will be a consent agreement for non-disciplinary CE that will be drafted for your review as well.
Thank you.
Probably expect that in the next couple of weeks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, we will now move to agenda item number 8, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding presentation by ASPPB on credentials banking and changes to the PLUS program. Ms. Pacanon, will you please introduce our distinguished guest from ASPPB, Janet Orwig, and provide a summary of this matter to the board?
Yes, Madam Chair and members of the board. Just a little bit of history relative to this topic. This board has historically been supportive of mobility, licensure mobility programs and initiatives, particularly those that are led by ASPPB. And in the past, you had wanted this board to participate in the PLUS program in order to help facilitate mobility by psychologists. However, for a period of time, one of the administrative rules prohibited us from committing to that program. The rule was retooled as of July of 2020, and we started to move forward with ASPPB to outline the requirements that we would need for our applications in the PLUS program. And while we were sort of moving forward with that process, the ASPPB board decided to reevaluate its mobility programs, and in doing so, they made some modifications. And so that's really why we have Ms. Orwig here today to explain them to us. And I know she will do a terrific job. She is a subject matter expert on this topic, as she is also the executive director of SciPact. So with that, I'd like to hand the presentation over to Janet. Janet, I hope you have share screen capabilities.
Let's see if I do
need, if you need them.
Wonderful. Are you seeing a presentation?
Yes, thank you so much and welcome.
Let me see if I can get it to start with the slideshow part. Is that working? Do you see the slideshow, or you still just see the...
We see it. We also see the slide.
The slide? Okay. All right. So thank you for allowing me some time to visit with you today about the ASPPB Psychology Licensure Universal System, or the PLUS, and the Credentials Bank Program. Would kind of like to start a little bit with an overview of the Credentials Bank. So it started in 1998 along with the Certificate of Professional Qualification in Psychology, or the CPQ certificate. And it has been in existence since then. It allows a psychologist to electronically bank their credentials. And by doing this, they are primary source verified. And so what that means is if someone has completed their internship program and they have all of their hours in there, they can send that information to be attested by their supervisor. So they send an email to the supervisor comes into the system, they attest to that information. We then follow up with a primary source call to that supervisor to verify that, yes, they did complete the information. And we have a series of other questions we ask for identification purposes. Some of the items that can be banked are the examination records, and that includes not just the ECCC, but also if they wanted to put information about any oral exams they may have taken with as part of licensure for another jurisdiction, any other jurisprudence exams. They also can provide information about all their practicum sites, their internship, their postdoc supervision. They can list coursework if they need to put that in. They we also receive all of their transcripts. Those are also primary source verified. There's also a section where they can enter in any information they would like to have added, such as course catalogs or syllabi. If they think there's a question about some kind of course that may come up later in their career and they're going to need that information. So the Credentials Bank really gives them an opportunity to store anything they think they may need as they proceed with their profession. A little bit of update on the PLUS. That it actually started in 2010, and it was created from a request from our members to create an online application. A lot of the jurisdictions at that time were starting to get that request and did not have the resources to do that. So ASPPB created a task force that went out and looked at every single licensing application for all the member boards and created a universal form based on that review. So they went to this application and they pulled common questions. I do think it's kind of always been interesting to me that you would think that name would be something that would be common across applications. It was interesting how even name was different on all of the applications and how you were going to try to record somebody's name. But they found pretty consistent application forms. So they created these forms in paper, and then they were turned into an online system. And that's where the PLUS comes in. It was designed to allow the psychologist to apply through those universal forms directly with ASPPB. ASPPB would gather that information and send it back to the PLUS boards that were participating with the programs. It did allow for the materials to be gathered by us. We do the same process with the PLUS records that we do with the Credentials Bank. We do primary source verification. We gather all of the materials, and then we put them in a packet and we send them back to the licensing board to review regarding eligibility for licensure. ASPPB does not determine licensure. We are the gatherer, and then we send it back. How it works now is that the states or jurisdictions that are still participating have someone apply to them for licensure. They have an abbreviated kind of demographic form that they gather. They send that to ASPPB. The PLUS staff reaches out to that person, instructs them of how to come on to the PLUS system and start their application. And then, like I said, we gather all of the information. That PLUS staff person works directly with that person, and then they move it forward to the licensing board when complete. But as Heidi was saying, it has been in existence for 10 years. And we kind of did an internal review, and it was started, like I said, to create an online application for jurisdictions that couldn't do so. Well, in the time frame of that 10 years, a lot of the jurisdictions were able to create their own online application, or they went under umbrella boards and online applications were created for an entire umbrella group, or some of them required it for their licensees, some made it optional for their licensees. Some had extra forms they wanted us to use. So it became a little less universal than it was when we created it. So we kind of reviewed it. And part of that review was to survey all of the participating jurisdictions. So we conducted a paper survey, an online survey with them in March of 2021. Because it was anonymous, I wasn't able to tell which jurisdictions hadn't completed it. So we did do follow-up calls with all of the jurisdictions. And part of the feedback during that call that we received was that the optional jurisdictions that were providing it, allowing their licensees to do it or not, they either could apply directly with the licensing board or you could apply through the PLUS. We're seeing confusion with their licensees. Some try to know why they were doing the PLUS. Did they need to do the PLUS? Should they do the state licensing application? So there was a little bit of confusion in the optional area, not any in the mandatory, because you have to do it for licensure. We also found that a lot of the optional jurisdictions were saying that it took longer than their paper application. So people were starting with PLUS and then moving over to back to the state's paper application because this was a longer, more detailed application than what the licensing board was requiring originally. They also felt that sometimes the packet was a little confusing because it did have so much more information than what they might have had in their original licensure application packet, and that they felt that the credentials bank packet would be simpler because it would just be pieces and parts. So what came out of the feedback from the optional jurisdictions was that 100% of them felt that they could utilize the credentials bank as a solution instead of using the PLUS and just taking items out of the credentials bank instead of going through the PLUS. So we did sunset the PLUS for optional jurisdictions. Where it stands now is that we do have 6 jurisdictions that use it for all of their licensees: Georgia, Mississippi, Nevada, North Dakota, Oklahoma, and the Virgin Islands. And as you can see, those are all fairly small boards, with probably the exception of Georgia. It is still available to jurisdictions if they are able to require it for pretty much all of their licensees, except for any coming through some exemption process that would have less requirements. But if the main licensing applications they feel can send through the PLUS, a jurisdiction can participate in that. So is the credentials bank an option for you guys? Because I do know that y'all were interested in the PLUS, but I don't believe, and I haven't checked on this, so don't hold me to this as I make the statement, whether or not it can be required of your licensees. And if it can't, is the credentials bank an option? It utilizes the same forms as the PLUS program. Actually, the credentials bank forms were modified, and all of our applications sit on the credentials bank forms now. It is still primary source verified, exactly the same way we do the PLUS program. The materials can be requested by the applicant through a credentials bank materials transfer. They can tell us what items they would like sent. And that material can be organized, easily navigated, and can be sent via secure portal, very similar to the way that the licensing board goes on now to get to the disciplinary data system or to get to the SciBook or any of the other options that the boards use. It can be on their board dashboard. This is kind of a sample of what the applicant sees. They're able to edit their demographics, their certifications, licensure, education. They can put in courses, practicum, internship, postdoc experience. There's actually even a section on conduct if they want to answer that section. That is kind of the summary of those conduct questions that we got from all the other licensing board applications. Sorry, it's a little too soon for pollen in Georgia, but my throat seems to think it's here. And that is all the information I have regarding kind of an overview, and I appreciate the time, and I'm open for questions.
Madam Chair, may I ask a question?
Yes, I was talking, but I was muted. Yes, thank you for that presentation, and yes, it is now open for questions.
Thank you. And I apologize. I'm definitely having some technical issues. So if I sound like I'm underwater or my monitors are suddenly disconnected from my computer, I'll do my best. So Janet, did I hear you correctly that so a jurisdiction would need to decide we're either all in with PLUS or we can simply maybe encourage or educate our licensees and applicants about the credentials bank? Is that a distilled down summary of what you said?
Yes. Yes. If you have an endorsement option that really just basically requires something really simple, you don't have to run those through the PLUS, but your full applications would need to go through the PLUS if you wanted to utilize that.
Okay, Madam Chair, thank you. Thank you, Jenna. I think what you are describing would be the outlier for us would be our universal recognition application. That's the a very simplified endorsement type of application pathway. I'm not sure whether our waiver or credentials applications, though, those would still ostensibly be PLUS and under the PLUS program if we went that way.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, board members, why this is, I think, a very timely discussion. So we are, of course, working with Thentia, our new online system, application renewal complaint system, our, for purposes of creating application intake for initial applications. So if we were to go the plus route, that has implications for what we would need Thentia to do for us. So this is where I think, you know, maybe some insights and some direction would be helpful.
Madam Chair, so what is the cost to our board? Do we have to pay anything for the plus system to ASPPB?
No. The plus system is a service to the member boards. So that is, it is free for the member boards. There is a $200 application fee to the plus apply applicant.
And Madam Chair, so in our rules, we have application fees, and how is there like cost sharing? Like how is that going to work?
Madam Chair, Mr. Diner, I can address that. One of the research responsibilities that I had as we were first looking at transitioning onto Plus, and at that time we weren't, I think we were thinking more of the, this is an option for applicants. We weren't necessarily thinking about Plus as a requirement. But I did research with our general accounting office whether we could do the revenue split, whereby of the $350 application fee, $200 would go to ASPPB and we would retain $150. I did get an affirmative answer that we could do that. And in my mind, that's appropriate because, you know, the fee should reflect who is tasked with the administrative responsibility of processing the application. Clearly, so much of this process would be on ASPPB, while the board would have also some responsibility. So in a short answer, yes, we can facilitate a fee-sharing arrangement and not impose, in the process, we're not imposing an extra $200 fee on the applicants, and, you know, which would be burdensome.
Thank you, Ms. Packman. And I think my question when this discussion had come up the last time was, it matters sort of for from the, you know, government funds perspective. If the money is touching the government fund and then money is going out of the government fund to ASPPB, it has different implications than if the, you know, $350 fee is collected by ASPPB and they are giving the state board $150 and keeping $200. So that may be something to look into, how that arrangement works out. So that's my one question. And my second question is, with Thentia, is there some kind of a cost reduction in the kind of tools package we obtain or tailor to our needs because we are getting applications for the Plus system, so we don't need the kind of functionality in Thentia that we would otherwise need? So those are my two questions.
Madam Chair, so to answer the second question, Mr. Diner, the Thentia is not charging us. Their pricing model is not, you know, hours, time, materials, you know, that sort of pricing. It's all one flat fee. So regardless of whether we ask for, you know, or need something simple, or we need a system that's very sophisticated with bells and whistles, they're committed to providing us exactly what we need that meets our requirements. And so I think maybe it would be helpful to hear from Ms. Orwig to describe the arrangements that they have made with other jurisdictions in order to conform to whatever accounting requirements exist in those jurisdictions. At least what I remember hearing, Janet, I hope you can speak to this, is that you you have a couple of different options in order to accommodate jurisdictions' needs where fee collection and fee sharing is concerned.
Correct. We have a couple of jurisdictions that, one, we invoice based on the number of applications we get, and they pay us for the fees, so they're not charging their applicants the fees. One of our previous jurisdictions, not it was one of the optionals, actually lowered their licensing fee. And so it was lowered for the people coming through the plus for this amount of money. And then they paid us through the plus for the regular $200. And those were the two options that we had.
And Madam Chair, so Mr. Diner, the way that the General Accounting Office had what they agreed to was a process called contra revenue. So we would collect $350. We would then, through that invoicing mechanism that Janet just described, we would remit the $200 per applicant to ASPPB, and it would reduce the value on the income side, but it would never show up as an expense to us. We could not participate in PLUS if we had to show that $200 as an expense, because we would quickly exceed our appropriation, and that's highly problematic. So it would just be all the math, if you will, would just be done on the revenue side through a process called contra revenue. So I think that invoicing approach would be ideal for this board.
Thank you, Ms. Packer, and thank you for looking into that. It refreshes my accounting knowledge a little bit too.
Very good. And I would, Madam Chair, I would love for Kathy folks, as our expert in application requirements for psychologists, I'd really like for her to weigh in with any questions that she might have. I'm sure she has some.
Ms. Folks, do you have any questions?
Mute. There we go. I couldn't get it off mute. Sorry. Madam Chair and board members, Ms. Orwig, we did a comparison of the PLUS app and our app's professional conduct questions when we were first considering this last year. And we noticed, there were wordings that were different. There was aspects that we would have to add to in order to comply with our statutes. This, I just want the board members to be aware, is it still true that we would be able to add to or have addendums for the applicants to fill out through the PLUS, or would we have to do it ourselves separately in a different document?
I believe you would still be able to add an addendum. I have Amanda Williams on here as well, and she manages our PLUS and ASPPB. We do still, and correct me if I'm wrong, Amanda, we still have forms that we are sending that are special to those jurisdictions. So if they have reference forms, things like that, if you needed some additional questions to go out as part of your application regarding conduct, we would be able to do that. Is that correct, Amanda? Thank you.
Okay, good. I just wanted to confirm that that's still the case after your survey and changes that you made. And then just for the board members also to be aware, the credential application only requires verification of the credential, ABPP, CPQ, or National Register, and verification of any licenses ever held. So that one would also not go through the PLUS application. The only application form that it would match to is our each exam and or licensure app. So it would be anything that comes through on that exam and or licensure app would be able to go through the PLUS, if I'm remembering correctly. So that would be ECCC only, ECCC and licensure and all the waiver options. I think it might be possible to use it for the temporary license application as well, since the form is the same and those requirements are almost identical to the ECCC only application. Those are my thoughts at this point in time. Thank you.
I have a question.
Can we, Dr. Mollett, can we go to Dr. Catarino? She was waiting right before Ms. Folks.
Yes, I had a couple of thoughts for looking at the pros and cons. So would this be faster? We don't have that many people working on applications. Would this be a slower or a faster process? Does anyone have a comment on that? No. We don't know.
So, and kind of following up with
Yes, I have some other points, but...
No, how long does it normally take once somebody starts a PLUS app before it gets to the board? What is your average turnaround time?
That really depends on the applicant themselves. And I think that's kind of the answer for any licensing board is how diligent they are in getting all of their information together. We do have a staff person that is dedicated to that. We do have triggers that highlight to us when something has been sitting for a while, and we do reach out to them. So it really is going to depend on how soon they start their application and how soon they work through their process. The two areas that seem to take the longest amount of time is, of course, the primary source verification, getting their attesters to submit their, go in and do the email verification of the attesting, and then getting back in touch with them by phone. The applicant is able to follow that in their application and see that this has been sent 2 weeks ago and they still haven't attested to it, and they can resubmit it. They can reach out and contact them and tell them it's coming. So there are some ways of working through that. The other is that we do a primary source verification of the doctoral degree and program, and that is sent to the program director, and getting that back can sometimes be a little bit of a delay, and we have to follow up with that. But those seem to be the two areas that drag it down. But it is really just kind of staff staying on top of it and the applicant themselves being diligent and watching their application go through.
So
do you have any data then of how long, like if once an application is completed, everything is in, how long the turnaround might be from your staff? Mean times or anything?
Once it's completed, it is immediately uploaded to the board's dashboard for them to have as part of their review. We do try to work with the board staff to make sure if there's any that need to be reviewed at a board meeting, we know when the upcoming board meetings are, and we try to stay in touch with the applicant, especially the ones that are really close, so that we can get those before the board. But it's once it is complete on our part, the packet is uploaded for the board staff to go get.
But we don't know, you don't have any data like on the mean time from a completed applicant to when you can give the information back to the board, right?
It would be kind of like almost immediately. Once it's once all the parts are done, it is put out for the board to pick up. So once an applicant has finished all of their parts and they have submitted it for review, we verify all the information and it immediately uploaded for the board to have access to.
So, and then financially, do we feel that we'd be okay with the 150? Is this going to be better for us financially? Okay. All right. I'm just trying to look if there, do you see, Ms. Pockerman, any negatives or positives, in your opinion?
Madam Chair, Dr. Catarino, I'm still working through, I think, a lot of those questions and issues in my own mind. And so, this fact gathering, I think, is really important. And just all the board members weighing in with their questions and their perspectives is so helpful. And I'm sure Dr. Malott has some other thoughts and questions. But I do want to, maybe I'll let Dr. Malott go first and then sort of shift the subject to something else that just occurred to me that I don't think we've explored yet with you, Janet. So I'll formulate the questions while Dr. Malott takes her turn.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Janet. Good to see you, even though it's on Zoom. And hello, Amanda. I don't think we've met before, but appreciate you bringing this. And I remember the very first meeting we had, I think in Sacramento, when we were going through this universal license option. But in terms of the PLUS application, I know it is promoted among doc students and doctoral students. They can start their PLUS, banking practicum records and things way back in their program. Is that correct?
Or the credentials bank, yes.
Yeah,
they can start banking anything at any time. The credentials bank is free for people to start banking their credentials. There is a $50 transfer fee when information is transferred, but if all they ever want to do is just have a housing program for it, that the credentials bank is theirs to use, and they can just keep putting stuff into it and updating it as they progress.
So if a student, and I know as a, being part of a program, we do encourage students, we inform them about the credentials bank. I don't know how many take advantage of it. I just ran into, I heard last night, a student, her computer fried, and she was panicking about all her practicum records, which is really sad, you know, and that's where the credential banks comes in, really handy if you've been banking it, you know. So so if somebody starts a credentials bank, you know, a student, and then they have everything in there, you know, then they are applying to Arizona. And I'm just trying to think about the two together. How does that work?
So the credentials bank application sits, everything sits on it. So if they've started their credentials bank and then they move over to a plus, those records are available to move over to that plus application. So they don't have to go back out and find that internship and postdoc supervisor. If there's any issues with whatever was put in there. So let's say they put in one record and they needed more hours, they will have to go and add and go get that other supervisor and get that information. But their record that they have put with us in the credentials bank is not lost, and they do not have to reproduce that. They would be able to roll that over to their plus application.
Oh, okay. So then it would just roll over. Okay. So I was just wondering how the two work together. And And so we can still continue to encourage people to use the credentials bank.
Yes, please. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, we are working with all the applications we've been working with, and with all the closed Argosy schools, it would have been very beneficial for a lot of the students to have had their transcripts banked. There's a couple of those schools that are in a little more of a mess than some of the other ones, and I feel really sorry for them not having those access to their transcripts. It would have been very helpful for them.
Okay.
You never know what the future is going to bring.
How does this, so 5 years from now, the person is licensed in one of, you know, say Arizona, and we are doing this, and they want to go for CPQ. In some ways, all their records are already there, right?
That is correct. They would probably need to update their work experience, because you do have to show 5 years of postdoctoral, post-licensure work experience. So they would need to update that information, but everything else that they would need for the CPQ would be available.
Okay. Thanks, Jen.
Madam Chair, I think I've formulated my questions, if Janet's ready to field them.
I saw Dr. Myers.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure I'm ready.
Ms. Patton, can we, Dr. Meyer had his hand up. Can we see his questions align?
Thank you. So appreciate you the information. Is there any kind of interaction between the PLUS system with the National Register of
credentials,
professional, right, the other credentialing options? How does that come into play? Because we allow for those other credentials. So I guess my concern here is there any advantage for the CPQ credential as opposed to the others that we accept?
Currently, there is no interaction between the National Register or the ABEP or the CPQ or the PLUS or that kind of thing. Because we do require primary source verification for our PLUS application as well as our credentials bank, we do require that the applicant send us that information, that it doesn't come through either the National Register or ABEP to us. So we don't utilize that information from those other organizations as creating a PLUS application.
Okay.
I think that answered it.
They're able to use the credentials bank. If they had a CPQ, then again, all that information would pull in there. Gotcha. But if they've used the National Register, for example, then they're not able to utilize that other banking system for the PLUS application.
Correct. They would need to complete the complete PLUS application.
Okay. And so is the, what's the ask here, Heidi? Are we looking to make this an option, or this is the only, this would go to the mandatory route for how people would apply for licensure here?
Madam Chair, yes, Dr. Meyer, you're framing the question exactly right. So in the past, when we were moving forward to participate in PLUS, we had options. We had the option to make it mandatory, or we had the option to encourage applicants to use this process for purposes of their own mobility, and you know, maybe incentivize it to some degree because we were collapsing under the weight of our demands, you know, to process applications. So the question really is, do we think that we are prepared to go all in, you know, commit to a mandatory process that PLUS represents now? We're acknowledging in the process the Credentials Bank is a great resource, and we would love to see our applicants and licensees use it. But yes, if the PLUS implementation train is to continue going forward, we have only the option to make it a mandatory process. And my questions are going to, Mr. Diner has another question, so I'll...
Let me finish with one more here. So what kind of resources are available for applicants to get help with their applications? I mean, I know ASPPB got swamped with free SIPAC requests, but I can't get a response on mine. I've emailed multiple times, so I have some real concerns about going this route when there may not be nearly as easy access for our applicants.
So the PLUS applications have their assigned staff person that manages their application. They communicate with the applicant from the start. They send them the information about how to get into the PLUS system, and they walk them through. Like I said, they have triggers that come up in the system to tell them when something needs to be done. But they have a staff specific person that manages those applications. And I do apologize for the SIPAC world. I will put my other hat on for a second and talk about that. We were not prepared for the interest in SIPAC. We did hire a good many temporary staff, and that may be where some of your communication issues. I've put your name down. I will go look at your application and get your response this afternoon. But we hired a good many temps to come in and help us get through some of the overload. It's a nice problem to have. We just were not quite prepared for it, but we're getting in a better place thanks to the temps and the additional staff we have hired.
Okay, those are my questions. Thank you.
All right, any additional questions?
I have now.
Mr. Diner?
Thank you, Madam Chair, but I know Ms. Packenham has been waiting for her question, so maybe she should go first.
I apologize. I assumed that Dr. Meyer may have rephrased the question that she was asking, but that was my misunderstanding. Ms. Packenham, are you ready for your question, or would we like to start with Mr. Diner?
Sure, I'm ready, and I apologize if maybe this was brought up in the discussions before I joined this board. You know, maybe they've already been addressed in some capacity, but I'm just now thinking about the requirement that we have with respect to a notice of deficiency. We are required to, within a certain time frame, and we are to track these time frames, we must issue, it's a formal notice with specific language. You know, we've received these elements of your application, these elements remain outstanding. So I think that, and I'm asking Ms. Galvin to weigh in, I think, I believe that if we were to require the PLUS process for application, that would not absolve us of this notice of deficiency requirement, the tracking of the timeframes and all those things. She's nodding in the affirmative. So Jana, I apologize. Maybe you've already addressed this, or maybe this is brand new and I just thought of it. So
it is brand new. So would catch me a little off guard. We do, like I said, we follow the application. So we used to have one of our plus jurisdictions that you had to have your application completed in 90 days, or you had to start another application. So we are able to follow and track. We would need to know what that timeline is that you need to provide them with information. And I am assuming it's what information is missing from their application, or is it what's wrong with their application?
So in the administrative timeframe, what is missing from their application file? So that would be a list of documents. So that timeframe would need to be tracked. There's also, certain events stop the clock, other events start the clock, and we are required to collect these timeframes for every applicant, and we have a reporting responsibility to certain entities as well. And if we violate any timeframes, then we have to refund the fee to the applicant. So this adds a layer of complexity that I only just thought of that I guess we need to explore that.
Okay, we do have, each of the PLUS staff has a application tracker that they keep on their own on each one of the applications and where the components stand. I think modifying that tracker to have dates and highlights of things that would be needed for your applications is probably one of the strongest places to look at that. I think it's something that we certainly can talk about and try to work through. It is not something we currently do. It's like I said, other than that jurisdiction where we had a stop or a start and you had to have all your application by this point. But we do keep up with all of the components as to when they've come in and all of that. So I think we would be able to utilize that tracker. Amanda, that sounds, do you think that would work the best?
I do.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
Dr. Caterino.
Is there any, this is mandatory if we go with it, is there any like probation period where we could try it out and see if we have any problems before we make a full commitment?
You can start and stop at any time you would like.
Okay.
All right, Mr. Diner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Ms. Pakenan. You asked one of the questions I was going to ask. I think in one of our auditing reports, there was some mention about the timelines for application processing. So I'm glad that that question is on people's minds. My question is regarding the information that ASPPB collects. My understanding is from what I'm hearing that you're collecting all sorts of information in order to comply with any number of 50 plus jurisdictions. And at that point, I mean, there might come a point where there is too much information that is going to be received by the board. I mean, there are all sorts of controversies with information collected on application forms. I mean, prefixes to use, marital status, demographic information. For example, what happens if as a state, we don't collect all of that information, but because of the banking of all of that information with ASPPB, you're going to send everything to the state agency, and now that becomes a record of a government agency. Most of that information is not subject to public disclosure, but it becomes a government record. So is there any way to arrange the information receipt on the state agency side so that we receive only the information that we need for our application and not just this information dump of everything that the applicant has uploaded?
I'm not sure if that's a question for me or for Heidi.
Both of them, because the systems need to talk to each other, right?
Okay. So the way we have done it for some of our other jurisdictions is that there are components that they do not require, coursework being one. That is a requirement for one plus jurisdiction, maybe not another. So the applicant has the opportunity to complete all that information if they want to, but it is not going to hold up their plus application and doesn't have to be sent with it if they don't complete it. So there could be items such as that. So say that you don't want practicum information or you don't want coursework or something like that. We can do the flow based on the information you want. questions that are inside those sections are pretty much going to have to come. The demographic page is going to have to come the way it is. So there's no way I can redact certain areas of it. It's still a generated form that comes out of the system. But there are sections that could not be sent if that would be helpful.
Madam Chair, sorry for the echo. I'm not sure what happened there. Ms. Galvin, I do have a question for you. At what point would an application become our record, our public record? Mr. Dinar generated some thoughts with his comments. Would the content be Arizona public record when it was submitted, at the time it's submitted to ASPPB, to PLUS, or is it only public record once it is forwarded to us for purposes of us evaluating that content?
I would argue that it would become a public record once it is in your possession. Whether it is subject to disclosure, we would have to look at a case-by-case basis.
Okay. And another completely different question, Madam Chair, if I may. We are one of the states that is moving forward with a workforce data collection initiative. So we do have a series of questions that very soon we will need to ask of every applicant, both at initial application and renewal. And it's a lot of data, and it's a lot of data relative to where are you working, what type of setting, how long are you going to be working, you know, are you full-time, part-time, do you expect to retire, you know, in the near future, and many, many more, and many iterations of these types of questions. So would PLUS be prepared to not only augment the application where we know today what we would need additionally, but also these questions that we will soon be required to ask? It's an extensive series of them.
We would love to be part of that workforce survey that you're gathering. That is something that ASPPB has been working on for many years, is to try to figure out how to get workforce. We had at one point added a component within the credentials bank and had questions in there to be asked, but because they're not required, didn't get a lot of support with that. We also have an external workforce survey that we've worked on. So I do think we could resurrect that section and put those questions in there. But we would be very much appreciative of being able to gather that information, because that is something we have been trying to find a good way to get. We think that that's so important for the profession, and trying to figure out how to gather good workforce data has been an elusive animal.
Yes, Madam Chair, Arizona, I think, is one of the states that's kind of out in front of that effort. The states that you shared earlier, I don't know that they have initiatives as we do, so we could potentially be the first.
Nevada made it part of a renewal at one point as part of their renewal process, getting workforce, but they didn't do it at the point of licensure. That's a different aspect of trying.
Any additional questions? Ms. Packanon, I guess Mr. Wynn, did you have a question? Okay. Ms. Packanon, I guess my question, since this so heavily impacts you guys, in addition to, you know, trying to coordinate to make sure that we have the public record information, kind of what are your thoughts for next steps? Are you still wanting some time to think about it? Do we need to reconvene, or do you have some suggestions for us as to ways that this would either help or hurt your guys' process and need a decision from us?
Madam Chair, yes, I think I need a little bit more time to ponder all of this, and some one-on-one time with Jana and her team, my team and hers, to sort of work through these questions. I think that I'm going to continue on the development path with Thentia so that we know that we have our own application intake process properly coded and deployed to the system. I think it would be a mistake for us to say we're going to put all of our eggs in the PLUS basket, and then we find down the road that there's something that prevents us from truly implementing that. And in the meantime, we told Thentia, don't bother with our psychologist applications. I think we need Thentia to continue on the path, and then we'll continue to have discussions with ASPPB and see if, you know, we can't make this affect this implementation at some point down the road. It's pretty important. It's pretty high stakes. I think everyone acknowledges that. And, you know, in the spirit of mobility, I think that we still would maintain an interest in PLUS. We just have to make sure that we are considering each and every implementation issue. But in the meantime, we're going to stay the course with our applications coming on board with Ventia.
Thank you.
And also, I guess, does the board see any issues with us issuing communications to our licensees, informing them of the benefits of the credentials bank?
I think we could let them know that there are different options. There's ASPPB, there's National Register. And I just, this would not apply at all, though, to the behavior analysts. Am I correct? Just want to be positive on that. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have no problems, then, to answer your question for me, if you let them know there are various options to store their credentials.
Okay. The one thing is most of the licensees, you know, unless they're planning to move state, they probably may or may not be interested. Like, you know, so if you wrote to me, I'm like, no, you know, so you're going to get a really, really the group is the students, you know, mm-hmm. That's the best time to get started. Well,
the students, my students did National Register because it was free at the time. So, I did encourage them to keep their credentials.
Okay, well, that was so helpful, Janet. Thank you. I really needed you to impart this information on the board and, you know, to hear their feedback, their thoughts, their questions for us to determine in what capacity we might move forward. So I appreciate very much the time and the presentation.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, and I really enjoyed hearing all the questions. It was a lot of thought, things I hadn't thought about in a while, so thank you very much.
Thank you for coming.
Have a nice meeting. Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right. Do we have any further discussion, or I think we have consensus for board staff to continue to follow up on this matter, and then that they are welcome to share information related to the credentialing bank. So if providers so choose. Any further discussion? I don't believe we need a vote on any of this. So we can move along. Before we do, I just want to check, does anybody have a need for a comfort break at this time? Right, hearing none, let's go ahead and move to agenda item number 9. Ms. Pakanon, would you please provide a summary of this matter to the board?
Yes, Madam Chair. We do have at least one representative of ASPA. I see Dr. House is here to provide us with an update relative to this initiative. And so I'll turn it over to Dr. House for that update, unless he has someone else that he would prefer share that information.
Sorry, got me? No, I think you're stuck with me, unfortunately. Dr. Blankenship, he's a legislative committee for ASPA. He's tied up, and then Dr. Northup is also kind of tied up. So it's just me. Any specific, I guess, questions first and foremost, direct questions that maybe I should answer? Sorry, I hadn't been on a call with you guys for, you know, the last couple of meetings, so I didn't know if there's anything pertinent that you guys wanted to start off with.
Madam Chair, I can sort of kickstart that if you don't mind. So I think where we last left off, we were anticipating the proposed legislation that ASPA wanted to advance relative to prescriptive authority. And so I've learned where the status of that is, but only me. I haven't shared it with the board at this time.
Okay. So, I mean, that's kind of a loaded question. So a lot of that legislation is, you know, the actual document is within the Sunrise Docs, which is a public document. The transformation or the evolution of those Sunrise Docs going into an actual bill had been put on hold as it would need to be kind of developed through an attorney. And then that attorney, we've learned, had since, it would make a lot of sense for that same attorney to, that is actually going to be writing the bill, to actually be the one implementing our lobbyist efforts on behalf of ASBA. And ASBA had not had a lobbyist at that time. So we had hence spent the last, I guess, 4 to 6 weeks pursuing legal representation. And after all that, things concluded with Lewis and Roca. The proposal was submitted to ASPA, the executive team, on behalf of Mr. Stephen Mortal over there at Lewis and Roca. That letter of engagement was agreed upon per ASPA executive committee and then signed by the ASPA president, Dr. Burrell. And so that's kind of that is a fluid development that just happened, you know, not just a couple of days ago as far as solidifying that representation. So now we're at that stage to where we're then meeting with attorneys over at Lewis and Roca and trying to give them some direction. So that's where we're at now. Dr. Neil Stafford is joining on kind of the RXP or the Prescriptive Authority Committee on ASBA, basically acting as a liaison with between Lewis and Roca and ASBA, just so there's an open line of communication, and not, you know, not just going straight to the you know, Prescriptive Authority Committee members. So we're happy to have Dr. Stafford, you know, on board and kind of helping us out with communication, et cetera. Anything else, Dr. Senator Bardo is still individual that is, you know, we're looking forward to champion the legislation. I think realistically, that legislation is going to be 2023 opposed to 2022. And again, there's kind of some ins and outs as far as like strategy wise, how alive do we keep the legislation efforts right now in order to build, you know, keep momentum for developing relationships with stakeholders, et cetera. But again, a lot of those discussions have kind of been put on hold until we develop the agreement with Lewis and Roca.
Thank you. Mr. Diner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Mr. House, for being here. So in one of the previous meetings, I think you weren't there, but I had asked a question about, which I would appreciate your answer on. So the question is, I mean, yeah, you're going to have this prescriptive authority for psychologists when they do an additional master's level course, is my understanding from our previous discussions on this topic. My question is, are you thinking of making this board, the Board of Psychologist Examiners, in charge of regulating that new license, if you will? And why is that? Because there are boards in Arizona that are better equipped and more experienced to deal with prescriptive authority than the Board of Psychologist Examiners. So while you're thinking of sunrising and while you're thinking of writing legislation, my view is it would be better off for you guys to give that regulatory authority to the medical board or someone who deals with prescriptive drugs. So what's your thoughts on that? Thank you.
Yeah, no, appreciate the feedback. I think right now through the, in discussion with other states that this has been going on again for multiple years, their direct feedback is actually kind of to the contrary to that. They're highly, highly, highly recommended that we stay under the regulatory board of the psychologist examiners. And again, the way, I thought we covered a little bit of ground here on this subject matter a month or two ago, the board requested kind of just some idea of what could be some, you know, additional expectations or requirements or burden upon the board, in which case we reached out to the New Mexico State Psychological Board of Examiners. They provided some feedback as far as duties, responsibilities, in addition to what they had seen previously to, you know, overseeing prescribing psychologists. And again, the conflict was nominal at best. And if anything, they've just you know, spoke very positively about the process as a whole. So yeah, based on
the thing though is, I mean, yeah, you can talk about the other state boards and what they're doing, but Arizona has a unique administrative scheme, and we have a long history of not just putting responsibility on boards out of convenience or efficiency. I mean, there has been at least some careful thought given at the legislature to place the authority where it properly belongs. And with medical stuff or with prescription, I mean, it just makes intuitive sense to place that authority with a board that has members, expert members on staff that deal with medical issues and prescription issues. So, I mean, I understand that you're, and I appreciate that you're involving this board in the stakeholder process, that you're keeping us apprised of everything. So I do appreciate all of that. But ultimately, I think the authority should go to some medical board, not to this board. So, I mean, and you are at an early enough stage of thinking about this that I want to plant that thought in your mind that the Board of Psychologist Examiners isn't the answer to all of your troubles. It can never be the answer to all of your troubles, really. I mean, if you're thinking of prescriptive authority, I think the licensees that you are sort of supporting would be better off if they were regulated by some other board besides the psychologist board. So, I mean, take my two cents or whatever you think they are, but that's my view on what you're trying to accomplish. And again, yeah, good idea, but it's who gets to decide this, who gets to regulate this. That's what concerns me.
Yeah, appreciate your feedback.
You, Ms. Shreve.
Thank you. Dr. House, you mentioned that you received feedback from, I believe you said, the New Mexico board in regards to their views of who should be oversight of prescriptive, those psychologists that have prescriptive licensing. Is that correct?
Yes. And again, I'm speaking in a secondhand information. I thought Dr. Northup had put that on a base. I thought she put it on first or second base because you, I think that was some feedback from your team months back.
All right. Can you forward that information to our executive director that you received from New Mexico?
Sure. I can look into that.
We have, you know, and I would echo Mr. Diner's concerns. There is no one on this board that has, that I know of, that is, you know, licensed to do prescriptive medicine. It's a whole different level of oversight. And it just seems like it would be better off with a, you know, someone of the physician or a medical board who understands prescriptive medicine much more so than we do. I think what we want is the best interest of the public. And I think that includes an oversight board that understands prescriptive medicine. So I'd have the basically same concerns Dr. Dinar has.
Do we have any other questions, Dr. Meyer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to put an alternative perspective out there, anytime we're talking about expanding scope of practice, we have to figure out new ways of handling that. I mean, it's been the same throughout history when psychologists start doing therapy, when that was only allowed for physicians and it became a separate field and there was a territory battle on who could do what. You've seen the same thing with nurse practitioners. The issue here is more just about what board currently exists to regulate this versus perhaps needing to expand our board's expertise to deal with this. I mean, and don't get me wrong, I want nothing to do with prescription privileges, but it may be that we need to consider, and my understanding from previous discussions is figuring out how the board membership might change to accommodate having the expertise to regulate prescription privileges is still upcoming. So this isn't all figured out yet, but this is something that I think we do have to at least address rather than just punting it to another board.
Thank you, Dr. And Dr. Davey, you can go ahead.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. I see both sides of this. I think that in many respects, this expansion of scope of practice has some serious, I still have some very serious questions about it. I think the major question I still have, and I'm not sure that we've gotten the complete answer yet from the organization, is what is the actual need around this? What is and what's going to be the uptake of psychologists that are actually going to take up the opportunity to expand their scope by going through the additional coursework? When I think about access to care issues and think about workforce shortages, just even on the behavior analytics side of the world, and I appreciate that that's occurring in psychiatry as well from my previous position overseeing a integrated care organization. Some of my question is, how is this going to benefit the public? Not only how do we protect the public, but what are the benefits to this? And then how do we weigh those against the risks that are there? So I still think I still have some questions about what the uptake or what the utilization will be around this expansion. And on the other side, I have some just big concerns around expansion, given this board's history just with us as behavior analysts, as I mentioned on the last discussion around this, and that, you know, we are by statute, not allowed to provide diagnostic assessments, provide diagnosis. However, there is a huge need for that. We don't have enough clinical psychologists, psychiatrists out there providing diagnostic work for particularly young children with developmental disabilities. I don't think that that's enough then to open up the scope of practice for behavior analysts by adding a few extra classes and then saying that they're allowed to do that. And so I have still concerns about just kind of our own history, our own precedents around that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. And I was going to add to, as it pertains to Dr. Meyer's comments, as far as scope from a board level of how the services we provide progressively result in us needing to have changes to the functions of the board. I would just add to what Dr. Meyer said. I mean, our behavior analyst licensing did just that as well, where we were in a position where And there was some turf war with it, where psychologists were like, nope, we can do all of these things. And we're like, yeah, but we're kind of serving in this different kind of capacity. And it took, there's still states that don't license behavior analysts because they can't come to that consensus with the psychologists in those states. But we started in that same boat of we came to consensus that licensure was needed. But then when the board was able to begin reviewing all of those circumstances, it came to light that expertise was needed. And then we, that's what kind of brought forth the committee and the addition of behavior analysts onto the board. So I just wanted to kind of echo what Dr. Meyer was saying, is that that's going to be a process that may have to take place just as a counter, not specific to just this, but just as services progress, it's a process that as a board will probably have to take place. Dr. Meyer.
And to follow up on both what Dr. Davey and you said, Madam Chair, we're also going to have to deal with the Masters of Psychology licensure movement coming up here soon, that this isn't the only this isn't the only area of scope of practice that we're seeing changes in for the field. But to echo, I guess, to Dr. House, what Dr. Davey asked is we've asked a couple times to see kind of what is the interest in pursuing prescription privileges from Arizona psychologists. And we still haven't seen any kind of numbers on what this is going to take a lot of work. What's the potential payoff for the public? What, how many people are going to pursue this, not only existing psychologists, but interest at the graduate level or undergraduate level, just any kind of survey data to say, are we going to have people that pursue this credential?
Yeah. Is that a kind of a two-part question? Because it seems like you're trying to get at, is the juice worth the squeeze, so to speak? Are we going to have psychologists actually pursuing the specialty? It sounds like that's a question. But then it sounds like there's also a question, is there a need for additional prescribing mental health professionals?
No, the need's been clearly established. It's too hard to get access to medication management. But is this the route to fill that void? Are psychologists the ones to do that? I know it's been done in some other states, but for a lot of those states, those numbers are very small of the number of psychologists that have pursued that credential. I think in order to help us make a decision or to better present your case, if you could show the data from other states on kind of the timeline of when was prescription privileges implemented, how long has it taken to get to a certain number of psychologists that are licensed to do that. So what's the real impact in other states, as well as what's the interest in this state of existing psychologists and grad students to pursue this option? So
yeah,
the data would be great.
Yeah, I think we did a pretty comprehensive study, over 400 plus people that were surveyed. I thought that information was sent over to you, but we can send that information was gathered. I got a good night, man, rather almost a year and a half, 2 years ago now. But those are the numbers that we have. The other things are anecdotal, the individuals, the actual psychologists, licensed psychologists that are reaching out to us on our executive team that are, you know, voicing their support all the way from healthcare institutions, all the way to leaders and healthcare providers, all the way to just, you know, one single office, you know, licensed psychologists that are working under their own shingles. So the support for us, again, the data I can send you that we did about 2 years ago, and then on the anecdotal level, you know, we can share interest. I'd also wonder the point of the interest, like the interest, I guess it's inquisitive in nature, but the benefit I think is overwhelming as far as the ability to provide top of the line assessment and diagnosis and then treatment for the public. And then the cost to the state is nil. It's actually a profit center. So when we're asking these questions, as far as we really need to understand the need, like most of the time that is because there's a cost, a huge significant burden, an expenditure that we're trying to allocate for. And I'm trying to find where that is.
Well, I think that the potential cost is malpractice.
Well, that's been proven. It's been going on for 30 plus years. We got you the stats as far as existing malpractice. So.
Right. And I'm not necessarily against this. I'm just saying
Oh, I got your question. I guess it sounds like it's just more inquisitive in nature. I don't know what's driving the question other than interest.
I guess to determine how to help guide the board's decision making on our approach to this, I guess, is what's driving it. Okay. So, yeah, that's all I had. Thank you.
Dr. Millett.
Yeah, just to reiterate what Dr. Meyer is saying, I think it, you know, because of the kind of, in some ways, a dismal record from the other states who've gone through this is a lot of work. I mean, it's an uphill battle in some ways to get this legislation passed. You need the medical board. They're going to be lobbying very strongly against this legislation and other boards as well. I'm not sure. And, you know, so it really needs to be worth the good, I don't want to use the word fight, but the good fight, you know,
yeah.
to get to that point. And if we have 20 people at the end of 10, you know, if you look at some of the other states, and I remember the data that was presented, it was really, really low. So many people haven't taken advantage of this. The great news with behavior analysts, once we got the license, and we were the first in the country to remind everybody to kind of propose and be successful. And we've definitely increased the number of people that are licensed now as behavior analysts in the state. So anyway, just a...
Yeah, just be prudent when you're wherever you're driving those numbers. Just remember that each state differs as far as the scope of practice that got approved. So just because a state has, you know, a license, you know, there's a psychologist that is able to get prescriptive authority on multiple states, it is darn near, you know, more burdensome than not. You know, the restrictions are so high that it's just not worth it. So New Mexico is the legislation and the model that has what we're modeling after as the most appropriate. So as far as driving facts and data, that's going to be your most accurate state.
Thank you. Ms. Pacanon, did you have a question or comment?
Two comments, if I may. One is that I think it's only been recently, I'll confess, that I'm starting to think about how we need to be ready to intake applicants, should this legislation, of course, be adopted. We will have, perhaps even from next door, New Mexico psychologists with this privilege who want to apply here right away. So I think we've been thinking in terms of, you know, there are applicants who will need to first undergo the required training before they apply. And so that buys us time as a regulatory board to have our resources and our requirements in place. And we really need to be ready for that endorsement or reciprocity interest to emerge right away. And that's a policy decision that, you know, the board, I think, needs to weigh in on. And second comment, if I understand what Dr. House has told me, or what he shared with this board, and then also what Dr. Thomas has told me, I believe that through the in the upcoming months, there will be stakeholder discussions. So if that's the case, if I understood that correctly, I do think that it's important for me to go to those. That offer's been extended to me. But I also feel strongly that we should have representatives of this board who attend those discussions as well, because I'll be thinking about this issue from an administrative and implementation perspective, but I won't necessarily have the background or expertise to think about these other issues and questions that are being raised by the board members.
Awesome. Yeah, we'd love to have you. And then to kind of touch a little bit, we have met with the AMA, we've had met with local medical associations, local psychiatric association. Communications and presentations have been done all around. We have open lines of communication there, and so far all communication has been pretty positive. So
my question is, are those organizations pushing you to make this board the regulatory board on this, or are they opposed to it? What's their stance?
No one's ever brought it up.
Yeah, well, then I get the distinction of being the first to bring it up, and I hope you give it some serious thought.
Yeah, appreciate it. Will.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you. And Dr. House, we appreciate you being here, and we appreciate you keeping us informed on the status of this, and board staff will continue to collaborate with you on upcoming events related to this. If you could keep board staff informed of meetings that would be beneficial for representation from this board and or Ms. Pacanon, please do so. We would appreciate that.
Yeah, it'll just keep in mind, most likely, if in legislation wise, it would be the 2023 legislative session. And again, a lot will be predicated based off our next meeting with Senator Bartow and her agenda for us moving forward. But as soon as we have that information, we'll definitely shoot that over. And then I will email, the other takeaway for me was to email the feedback from the New Mexico board regarding the governing board. And then I'll also re-forward the research that was done regarding psychologists' interest, et cetera, to the board.
Excellent. Thank you.
No problem.
All right. Ms. Pakanon, I'm wondering if there's a short agenda item and then a comfort break, perhaps.
Yes, Madam Chair. I can give you quick updates relative to 14 and 15.
Okay, let's start with 14. We'll do agenda item number 14. Ms. Pakanon, will you please provide us an overview?
Yes, Madam Chair. At the conclusion of your previous meeting, you had asked for this agenda item just for purposes of, you know, providing some sort of an update to the status of the appointments to the two vacant psychologist positions on the board. And so I reached out to the Director of Boards and Commissions, Trista Guzman Glover. I did not receive a response to my inquiry. You saw that in your board meeting folder. What I did instead receive a few days later was Ms. Guzman Glover's announcement that she was leaving the office in 2 days. And she would be addressing some vacancy appointments with the time that she had left, and also supporting the new staff on some level to get appointments accomplished. And this was just a general email sent to all boards and commissions. So this reply wasn't specific to just us. So I did reach out to Ms. Alyssa Foster, who is the new Director of Boards and Commissions, for an update, and I did not receive one for this meeting. So I hope that during this transition process that our situation is addressed soon, but I don't have any other update.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Pakanon? Right, hearing none, let's go ahead and review agenda item 15, discussion related to issues with COVID-19. Ms. Pakanon, would you please provide a summary to the board?
Yes, Madam Chair. Really, from the board staff's perspective, we continue to do what we've been doing all along, which is, you know, making smart decisions about our time in the office. And we are finding increasingly that remote work is quite successful, particularly as you read in my executive director's report, we have finally new computers, and we're finding that just something as simple as that has made a big difference in terms of our what we can accomplish and the amount of time that we need to accomplish it. Relative to the state of emergency, no updates to share. I think we all have seen that there are a number of governors that are making announcements about mandates and behavior changes and requirement changes now that cases are trending down again. And so that may or may not be something that we hear soon, but I know that seems to be an emerging development from other states. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Pakanon? All right, hearing none, we're at the 2-hour mark. We have a couple of agenda items that are going to take a little bit of discussion. And so I wanted to propose that we do a 10-minute comfort break and return at 10:40, and then we'll wrap up the rest of the agenda and get you guys on your way. Ms. Shreve and Dr. Malott, if you guys are here but your cameras are off, if you could just acknowledge, it'd be great. Just want to make sure we have quorum. Thank you. All right. We're going to go ahead and proceed. I'm sure Dr. Malott will be able to join us. For the sake of time, Let's go ahead and do agenda item number 11 while we're waiting for Dr. Malott to return. Ms. Pacadon, do you have an update for the board related to legislative session?
Yes, just a brief one, Madam Chair. You have the report that I prepare and issue generally every Friday. There really isn't any legislation to highlight in terms of, you know, forward progress, with the exception of the House Bill 2178 that, as you discussed last month, the school psychologist exemption language changes, the clarifying language. That bill did easily pass the chamber of introduction, the House, on a vote of 58-1-1. So that will cross over. Many of these bills, at least as it appears today, they may not even get a hearing. And some haven't even been assigned to committee. So ostensibly in this next week, if those things don't happen, if they're not assigned and they're not heard, then by Friday, they will die, because next Friday, the 18th, is the deadline to hear bills. So one other comment that I have is Senate Bill 1568. That bill, as I wrote about in my executive director's report, did precipitate a stakeholder meeting to discuss the proposed language. A number of concerns were raised about implementing it. And what we heard from the bill sponsor, Senator Bartow, is that when this bill comes forward, we should expect amendments. It has been scheduled for next week's Senate Health and Human Services Committee. We have it's posted, but without an amendment. So now we are looking for that amendment. It could drop in the next several days. So that's really what I am monitoring at this time, but I'm happy to answer any questions. Oh, and I should say, of course, as I noted in my report, striker bills are now becoming more of, are starting to emerge. So monitoring those as well will take my attention. But if anyone has questions, I'll do my best to answer them.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Pacadon? Hearing none, let's go ahead and do agenda item number 10. Let's see. Dr. Malott, are you back with us? All right. Let's go ahead and proceed with number 10. I'm not sure Dr. Malott's back yet, but for the sake of time, would you please provide, Ms. Pacadon, would you please provide a summary of this matter to the board?
Yes, Madam Chair. So my goal today was to really field any questions that you may have or address any omissions or drafting errors that you may have found in reviewing these draft proposed changes. We have discussed through them on many occasions, and so I didn't intend to do that unless you want me to, but what this material represents is Jeannie Han, our contract rule writer, has prepared these drafts based on the capturing the discussions that we've had, the requests that we've made of her. So I believe these drafts are an accurate representation of what we want to propose to change. But again, if you see that something is incorrect or that we've overlooked anything, I think now is the ideal time to address that. Assuming the board is happy with these drafts, the next steps would be requesting the waiver of the governor's office. There is a moratorium on rulemaking, but there are certain provisions that would allow a rulemaking to go forward. And so what my intention would be is to, with every change, identify under which provision that the change can move forward. So for example, the fingerprint card clearance requirement, that's a proposed change in order to implement a statute change. So that's what I would cite as the justification for that. If we were decreasing a regulatory burden by removing a rule or by decreasing a fee, I would cite that as the justification. So that would be the next step in this process. But back to the drafts, I'm happy to address whatever you found or whatever you had questions or concerns about.
Excellent, thank you. Does anybody have any questions? Ms. Shreve?
I just have a comment. I read through it. Heidi did a great job. It looks great. It captures everything that we talked about in detail in some of our meetings. So anyways, I thought it looked good.
Excellent. Thank you. And kudos to our rule writer. She is actually the former director of the Governor's Regulatory Review Council. So we have the best resource that we are working with. So I worked with her in the 2000s, and you know, the fact that she's still available and supporting this board is a gift to us.
Awesome. I echo Ms. Shreve's sentiments. I do also want to just mention mostly Ms. Pakanon. I have reviewed, so in light of one of the administrative concerns that came up with the behavior analyst application, and that's specific to supervisors signing off on other supervisors' experiences, I have reviewed the rule, and I think the rule leaves it open for us to address as a committee at the form level. I don't know if I'm missing that, if that's your guys' understanding. What we wanted to do is make sure it wasn't a rule issue that we needed to address now so that we could address the form. Essentially, what's happened in the past is the current supervised experience form says that somebody familiar with your supervision can sign off on your supervision. And initially, we understood that to be done early on because supervisors were hard to reach. And so it was one of those, if you had five different supervisors and they all moved out of state, we were trying to have a way that if you're still working with the same company and the director of that company was a part of your whole experience, even though you had multiple supervisors, that person could essentially sign off. But what it turned into over time was as a committee, we were kind of catching some irregularities in who probably could have or should have signed off. and what we ultimately landed on in a previous rule amendment was to allow for the BACB forms to be submitted by the supervisor in lieu of this other form. So as far as I can see, I don't think it's a rule issue, Heidi, unless I'm missing something. So I'm good with everything moving forward and us just addressing this at the committee level as a form issue for that specific document.
Yes, Madam Chair. My takeaway was exactly that as well. Of course, I defer to your expertise and Dr. Davies, but I don't see that we have, this creates any challenges for us that we can't address through that intake process.
Anybody have any other questions, concerns? Dr. Meyer.
Thank you. Thanks for all your work on this, Heidi. The only thing I noticed was about doing the jurisprudence module that we're going to put out. Do we need to specify that counts as a certain amount of continuing education? Because it just says we have to complete this. Is it falling under the 4 hours of, it's separate from the 4 hours of professional ethics. But does it count towards the 40 hours overall?
Dr. Meyer, that's an excellent question. Sorry, I'm scrolling all the way to 207. Here we go.
It's page 27.
Oh, yes. I consider exactly what you said to be an omission. We do need to assign credit to that because this whole policy decision and arrangement was predicated on it would not be in addition to the 40 hours. It would be a subset of the 40 hours. So we were not increasing any cost. In fact, what we're doing is we're creating a learning activity that is extremely affordable, less than what the average cost of CE is. So yes, we need to represent what the value of the jurisprudence tool is here. It was just entirely overlooked. Great catch. I think the board had decided on 4 hours, 4 units.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Well, I think that was going to depend on what it actually ended up looking like, right? As far as once it's developed, it needs to be based on how long it takes to go through it.
Yes, Madam Chair, Dr. Meyer. So I think we had, this is the discussion I recall, I hope I recall it correctly, that there was some assumption made that anybody who would be completing this exercise would devote a certain amount of time to preparation, to studying, to reviewing the statutes and rules, and not only the statutes that are under the board's chapter, but there are other statutes that are in a general chapter for healthcare professionals. There's a lot of content all the way around. So they would review that material and then take this module. It's not timed, so they wouldn't be, because it's not a high stakes exercise. So they can go through it as quickly or slowly as they need to. And then also with the correct answers, they're provided the justification and the citation to the statute or rule where they can find that information. So I think the board was comfortable with the assumption that it would be a 4-hour exercise. And so 4 hours of credit was appropriate.
Okay. I can't remember the number we said.
I thought it was 4, but
Madam Chair, what I can do is I know we have that motion. Obviously we captured it at some point. I can go back and affirm that it was 4 or whatever the value was, and then give that direction to Ms. Hand just to insert it. I am quite certain that you arrived at a value and it just didn't get into this draft.
And on that same note, and perhaps I'm just muddying all of the discussions we've had, but we did also have a motion on the DEI component of CEUs, the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Edition. Was that something we were adding here? Was that something that we had discussed to be at a later time? I don't recall, but I do
you mean
know-
the diversity?
Yes.
Yeah, that I saw that in this.
It's right below the jurisprudence piece, directly below it.
Oh, okay. I tried to find it and I couldn't find it. And is that for a behavior analyst as well?
I don't remember.
No.
Did we miss it in the BA draft?
That's probably where I'm missing it.
Madam Chair, I think you're right. Let's look there too. Correct. So that would be another addition that we would need to get to Ms. Han. Yes, we overlooked it in this one too.
Okay. All righty. Well, I think that is all I had. Does anybody else have any other comments or questions? It was a great catch, Dr. Meyer. Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. We will now. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, just I'm thinking like a bureaucrat. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. So what I'm going to recommend is that the board just whether it's by consensus or whatever, in the interest of keeping this moving forward and me starting that process that I described with the governor's office, if you feel that these are, you know, changes that you can entrust me with, then I'm happy to carry them forward and you don't need to see these drafts again. That being said, that doesn't mean that you couldn't, there are other points in the promulgation process where you could say, no, we're not moving forward with, you know, a particular change. So this isn't, you know, the very last time you'll see this.
I'm comfortable with it. I don't know if we have consensus from the board, but this will allow for the process to move forward without us having to reconvene at another meeting just to review this again.
I'm comfortable.
So I think a motion to approve these as proposed rules. Heidi, is that what you're looking for?
Yes, with the two edits as described. Yes.
And to seek an exception from the moratorium would be appropriate.
Yes.
Before we do that, Heidi, the language on the behavior analyst piece that we talked about for the verified course sequence, I do think that I think the way that the rule writer wrote the change to B is correct. Again, this is page 11. Mm-hmm. My question is that probably should change the language in C as well of classroom. And I thought we talked about that, but maybe we didn't. The board shall accept classroom hours of graduate level instruction completed at an accredited institution of higher education or in a program approved by the BACB. In that case, it's going to be an accredited, it's a VCS coursework at an accredited institution.
Yes, Dr. Davey, it's quite possible we did.
Yeah, we just need to pull that language. We just need to clean the language up based up on what we did up top to see. Or to be.
Very good, yes. Okay, I'll include that in my requested edits for Ms. Hand. Good catch.
Because we just got that language from her. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Diner?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So on the diversity point that you raised, Dr. Wilson, I'm seeing on page 26, there is 4 hours of continuing education regarding diversity. Is that what you're referring to, or is it something else that I'm missing?
Yes, that is correct. But it is listed as it pertains to psychologists, but not behavior analysts. So the request would be to have that added to the behavior analyst section as well.
Madam Chair, Mr. Diner, we would need it in R-426-409 in addition to R-426-207. And what I haven't sort of explained is that this, unfortunately, we're dealing with two different documents, and that's the way that we have, because these are two different chapters and titles, they're not all bundled together where they're on a continuum in one notice of a proposed rulemaking where it starts with psychologists and then it moves into the behavior analyst rules. We're really doing two promulgations, and we have to by the construct of the rules. So it's confusing.
Two documents to track.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any additional questions, Mr. Diner? Did that help?
No, that helped. And I guess I've expressed my views in opposition to including diversity, but that ship has sailed, I think.
Yeah, thank you. All right, any other questions or comments? All right, hearing none, do we have a motion? I move that we accept the rules as provided to us pending the drafts discussed today in today's meetings to allow for Ms. Pakanon to proceed with the process to move these rules forward. Should there be any issues, she will come back to us and we'll be able to change provide feedback at that time.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries. We will now move to agenda item number 12. Yeah, that's right. Discussion, consideration, possible action regarding the board member and staff participation in the 36th mid-year meeting of the Association of State and Provisional Psychology Boards. Ms. Pakanon, would you please provide a summary of this matter to the board?
Yes, Madam Chair. At last, we have an opportunity to spend some of our out-of-state travel budget, as I had indicated. We hoped that in-person meetings would have resumed early in the fiscal year, and so we wanted to ensure there was ample resources for maybe pent-up demand on the part of board members and staff to attend meetings. It's only now that ASPPB is offering or resuming in-person meetings with their mid-year meeting in April. And so we do have quite a bit of resources to support the attendance of multiple representatives from Arizona. So I want to acknowledge that Dr. Malott's attendance will be funded, if not in full, to some degree, I believe, Dr. Malott, so she can accept her fellow award. And I know you'll be receiving that information and directions very soon.
But what date is it?
It is April 20. Hold on a moment.
First through the 24th.
Correct.
Do you know, it's such a bad time for me. So I don't know what I'm going to do. But
Hopefully you can make that work. Is there any interest on the part of the board to attend this meeting? Ms. Michelson and I are both extremely interested, and we may even, depending on how many board members are interested in attending, we may extend that consideration to other members of the staff because of the content of the program. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Dr. Meyer?
We've typically sent the newer members that have come on board that haven't attended before. I'm guessing we've got several that have not been there. Who hasn't been?
Mr. Nguyen, Mr. Diner, and Dr. Caterino, I would suspect.
Where is it, Heidi?
Madam Chair, Dr. Malott, it is in New Orleans, Louisiana.
Okay.
And it is the 21st or the 24th. And we do have a request for speakers from our association. So there is, I thought it was a general request out to everybody, but I got an email yesterday that I'm going to forward along to you, Heidi, from the representative of the ASPPB board chairs meeting, which is why they emailed me directly. That they are hoping that we would have a representative that could speak to at least one of the agenda items that they're proposing for the meeting. And so I don't know if there's folks that just want to go but aren't willing, you know, aren't ready to do that or interested in that, that's fine. Then maybe Heidi and I could look at that list and see if there's something that we can contribute at a staff level, which I think, honestly, I think there's plenty to contribute even at a staff level.
Do you know the topics, Diana?
Yep. Let me pull those up real quick. Mm-hmm. It looks like they're looking at master's accreditation, competencies, and licensure.
So, oh, Dr. Myers.
Yep. Dr. Myers, program accreditation, and that's going to be looking at what's best for public protection. We'll look at issues surrounding requiring program accreditation for licensure or registration.
Oh, I want to speak on that. I have very strong feelings.
All right. So
if I dislike the whole interaction of private and public interfering, you know, so I do want to speak on that. I have very strong opinions. So.
And then North American Standards for Licensure Registration, Challenges and Possibilities. And they're looking at more of that movement, similar to what they presented of how do we look at a national level versus just state jurisdiction. And those are barriers to licensing, ensuring a fair process for all. So looking at requirements for licensure that might pose greater hurdles for some than others, requirements that might not appear to be connected to the education training or readiness to practice. So similar to what our Sunset audit kind of showed us as far as some requirements that maybe we had that weren't really linked to practice and could have served as a burden. It looks like those are the four topics. So yeah, Dr. Malott, if you are
I'll speak on the negative side because I really think private organizations shouldn't dictate to state governments you know, well, it's a great thing. I just submitted an accreditation report last night. I still have very strong feelings about that. So.
Perfect. And Madam Chair, if I understand what they're looking for is exactly what we were describing, which is the point and counterpoint perspective. So mm-hmm. That's, I think we heard where Dr. Malott falls. I will make that clear.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of states have pushed back, but people have forgotten the whole separation of state and private organizations dictating what we do and who we license, and really the whole, you know, work act that states are responsible for. And so there's a lot of, but it's amazing how the boundaries have gotten blurred over the years. And so, anyway, that's just my perspective, because they are private organizations and they charge us a lot of money for getting that stamp of approval. Yeah. And then to dictate who gets licensed is really mixing it up. So, I don't know. So, sorry. I know this is not on the agenda, but
I know Dr. Davey has some thoughts on accreditation as well. So maybe we'll send both of you and let you guys do it.
I think we would be a great pair of strongly against.
right. All right. So the ask now. So I will make sure that I respond to Dr. Olvey and Ms. Horn with that interest. I will CC you, Heidi, so that you have the list and you guys can review from a staff level if there's other contributions that you guys would like to make. So then the ask now is there anybody from the board interested, willing to, able to attend?
You know, I'm strongly considering it. I'm looking at my calendar and I'll do my best to, I'll get back to you, Heidi, in a few days. I need to talk. I have a board meeting that I run on Thursdays. And maybe I can do that and get there Thursday evening. Yeah, I think the luncheon is on Friday, generally from what I remember in past years. And and who doesn't want to go to New Orleans? So.
Yeah, I'd be interested in it as well. Anything that I can do to absorb and become a better board member, I'd be interested in. I just have to look at schedules and see if it works.
Mystery.
This is off point. Mr. Nguyen, it's definitely worth going as a public member. I did that and I learned so much. As I mentioned to Ms. Pakanon, I actually have to sign off now. I got another commitment I have to go to, and I think we have enough on the board to cover that as far as a quorum. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.
Madam Chair, if I may, Dr. Mala, I'm looking at the program, and actually the recognition of previous awards is on Saturday.
Oh, okay. So that might help a lot, because I think I could definitely get there Thursday evening.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And I am, I've expressed this to you, Ms. Pecknon, but for the other board members, I am happy to go to represent and participate. I do find it to be valuable. When I went a few years, it's been a few years now. When I went before, it was an extremely valuable experience, but then also getting to meet the other chairs, getting to correspond with the other jurisdictions on some of these issues, and just listening to the presentations is of great value. So if there is room for me to go, I would like to please prioritize Dr. Malott, Mr. Nguyen, and whatever staff that you think are appropriate, because I have been before.
My way is going to be paid for by ASPPP. So I'm really not going to impact the budget too much.
And Madam Chair, we have this resource available to us this year. I haven't started budgeting for next year yet, but if I had to predict, we'll have fewer resources next year. So we may as well avail ourselves of this opportunity now while we have the funding, you know, by not going anywhere for much of this fiscal year. That's what's in part what's enabled us to have, you know, such a a flush account from which to draw upon. So, and I do think a motion is a good idea because it is out-of-state travel during a pandemic. And, you know, we can all see in the program about the precautions that are being taken, but I think that's prudent.
Okay. And in that motion, do we have to specify the people? And I only say that because I know Mr. Nguyen and others wanted to check their schedules and get back to you. So the motion is just specific to the board agreeing to send representatives to New Orleans during the pandemic for the purpose of this meeting. Sweet. I've been so moved.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries. All right, Ms. Pakanan, do you need anything else from us on that matter at this time?
No, thank you.
Okay. Do you have a proposed deadline for when everybody needs to get their schedules and availability to you?
Oh, great question, Madam Chair. Let me, I mean, the sooner the better. We're not paying a registration fee. So there is a, you know, a sort of a deadline or a point in time at which, you know, the price becomes higher to attend. But, you know, where airfare is concerned, the sooner the better.
Okay. Thank you. All right, we will now move to agenda item number 13 of similar topic, but more so for the behavior analyst, the 12th Annual Association of Professional Behavior Analysts Convention. Ms. Pakanan, will you please provide an overview of this agenda item as well?
Yes, Madam Chair. So just by way of clarification, there isn't an ASPPB-like organization for behavior analysts. So regulatory topics, regulatory content, just sort of has to be developed and offered within the auspices of the professional associations, which we're glad we have that they have an interest and they afford us an opportunity to have regulatory based discussions. But in this case, it's the Association of Professional Behavior Analysts announcing that they will have a meeting for regulators and they will have some regulatory focused sessions at their upcoming meeting in March. I'm sorry, I put the wrong dates on the memorandum. That those dates are in March and
the 7th through the 19th.
Thank you. And coincidentally, also in New Orleans, Louisiana. And so just some history, a similar programming set was to be offered with this association's meeting that was scheduled back in, I think, March of 2020, maybe April of 2020, and of course was canceled due to the pandemic. That would have been my first opportunity to attend any sort of regulators meeting where regulation of behavior analysis was concerned. So I kind of see this as an opportunity for me to have a do-over and potentially, depending on how much funding we have left over in our travel budget, we may be able to send more than just me to this meeting.
Dr. Davey?
I just think it's a great opportunity to get you out there, Heidi. You, Ms. Michelson, board staff, I think, you know, be highly beneficial for you to be engaged with APBA as past board member, past board president of APBA. I'm slightly skewed towards my views on its value in terms of public policy and legislation and regulation, but they are fully engaged to that across all 50 states. And I would highly encourage you to take that opportunity to go engage with those individuals. I know that the BACB will have representation there as well from the regulators group that you're active in. And so for you to be able to personally meet those individuals and interact with them, I'm all for that.
Thank you for that, Dr. Davey, Madam Chair. We've also talked about how because there isn't an infrastructure for regulatory education, our participation may give us an opportunity to help guide and shape that into something that's more consistent and more formal going forward. And I'm glad to hear you say that Ms. Michelson would be appropriate to attend this meeting as well. I do believe that she will probably eclipse many other states with respect to her experience in, you know, particularly investigating these professionals. So she will learn a lot, but I think she will also offer a lot if she is able to attend.
Ms. Pacanon, and I know I've kind of alluded to this. I think of all of the organizations, professional organizations, this particular one is the closest to similar work of ASPPB. It's not the same setup. It's not formed the same way. It doesn't have the jurisdictions the way that it does. I could see a future in which this would be the organization that could potentially move to that direction. This is the one that has been the leader in public policy in our field for many years. And I think it's the one that's going to have the most robust and quality education opportunities for that. To that same point, and Dr. Malott mentioned it earlier, we are one of the first, well, we are the first to license behavior analysts successfully under a psychology board. We are the only one in the format that we are with behavior analysts and psychologists working together. And there's a lot of things that I think we've been able to do over the years that have been road bumps for other states. And fortunately, APBA has always had Dr. Davey on committees and in leadership there prior to time on the board. So not as a duty or role of the board, but clearly their direction in public policy has been influenced by him, which I think is a representation of Arizona, and continuing to put our face out there as a state that is progressive and interested in these topics and wanting to move the needle, if you will, across the other 50 states. I think I agree. I think it's a learning opportunity, but more so, I think it's also a demonstration of leadership from our state.
Yes, Madam Chair, just my experience both working for a federation and prior to that being an administrator, board administrator from, in this case, the physical therapy board, where I was able to participate sort of in the birth and growth of, you know, this kind of an opportunity or this kind of vehicle through which information can be shared among regulators. I'm really excited for the potential here and to offer whatever I've learned along this pathway to this group.
Awesome. And as far as I know you'll look at budget and such. I don't know, Dr. Davey, are you planning on going? Is that something you would like for her to consider in the budget?
I'm not planning on attending this year. We are sponsoring several things, and I have influenced the lineup of speakers in several ways as well. But personally, I can't. Timing is such that I have another obligation. So no, there's no need to include me in this one. Maybe I'll babysit them next year when they go after they've made some friends.
So I too had a presentation scheduled for March of 2020 that was postponed. And we have received word that we will be proceeding with that presentation. At the time in March of 2020, the approach and was going to be not as representation from the board, but more of just my own personal professional representation with a disclaimer. That still is the plan. However, I will be speaking in kind of their regulatory track. And so I don't know if that's something that now that they kind of have I call it a track because I think that's the direction it's going, but now that they have established kind of a regulatory track, I don't know if that changes the discussion on, like I said, my presentation was actually from March of 2020. So a lot has happened in 2 years. And I will be reconvening and speaking at that event for March of this year. All right. Ms. Pacanon, then I think we should probably also do a motion for out-of-state travel to New Orleans again, guys.
Red flags are red flags are going off all over the place in the budget office of the governor's. He's just, what's going on? Psychologists are going out to party in New Orleans back to back weekends. Like, really?
Okay. So, same scenario. I move that we approve for depending on the budget. Approve for staff and or board members of interest to travel to New Orleans in March for the APBA conference as well.
Second.
Do we have any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Ms. Pacnon, please keep us in touch with what the budgets look like, what you're proposing for who to send where, and we will look forward to having some good representation mid-COVID. I was going to say post-COVID, but I don't know that we're post-COVID. So,
and Madam Chair, I assume anyone who attends a meeting has a responsibility to report out to the board as well, right?
Yes, please. That would be wonderful. Like I said, it's been a while. We're rusty, but I do believe that was the process in the past.
Yes, thank you. I'm not sure we still know how to do this, but we'll fumble along and figure it out.
All right. Thank you very much. We will now move to agenda item number 20. That's any future agenda items. The only one that I noted was if we could please kick back to the CBA committee the review of that supervisor form. Now that we know that it's not at a rule level and just at a form level, perhaps we can have the CBA take a look at that. Anything else? All right, hearing none, we'll move to agenda item number 21. Do we have a motion for adjournment?
I move to adjourn.
Thank you, Mr. Jainer.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries. Thank you guys very much. And thank you, board staff, for another short and sweet meeting.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.